A few years back, History of the Saints began production of 7 seasons of a documentary television series titled History of the Saints. Season 1, Foundations of the Restoration. Season 2, Joseph Smith's Kirtland. Season 3, From Pentecost to Persecution, The Missouri Years. And Season 4, Joseph Smith's Nauvoo. Then 3 more seasons telling the story of Brigham Young and the Saints, beginning with the Nauvoo Exodus in 1846, titled Gathering to the West. Then Building Zion. And finally, The Kingdom Endures. Altogether, over 100 hours of Latter-day Saint pioneer history. For these and all of History of the Saints books and DVD products, visit us at historyofthesaints.org.
Welcome to the History of the Saints podcast. My name is Glenn Rawson, series host. What you are about to listen to is an episode about the documentary history of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. This episode is one of more than 250 presentations from 1805 and the birth of Joseph Smith the prophet through 1877 and the death of Brigham Young. This series interviews some of the finest scholars of our time and presents the latest in historical research and facts as it relates to early Latter-day Saint history. And it comes from the long-running, highly acclaimed television documentary series, History of the Saints. If you have a desire to learn the history in depth and detail, then this podcast is for you. Thank you for joining us.
I made an attempt to take them out, but was forbidden by the messenger, and was again informed that the time for bringing them forth had not yet arrived. Joseph Smith, Jr.
September 21st, 1823. 17-year-old Joseph Smith, Jr. had just learned from the angel Moroni of the presence of an ancient Christian record on gold plates buried in a hill not far from his home. Joseph expected to receive those plates when he went to the hill. He could not have known at that time that it would take 4 years of instruction and intelligence from the angel before Joseph was prepared and able to receive that record. This episode of History of the Saints is about those 4 years of preparation from 1823 to 1827. We begin June 22nd, 1823.
Joseph Smith is powerless to sleep, and pretty soon the rooster crows. It's time to go to work.
The next day, he and his father and his brother Alvin were reaping in the field together when suddenly Joseph stopped and seemed to be in a deep study for some time. Alvin hurried him, saying, "Joseph, we must keep to our work, or we shall not get our task done." Joseph worked again diligently, then stopped in the same way again a second time. His father saw that he was very pale and urged him to go to the house and tell his mother that he was sick. Lucy Mack Smith.
As he leaves the field to go home to rest at his father's instruction, he faints, or he falls unconscious, and the next thing he becomes conscious of is the angel standing there again, reminding him of the same information. In Lucy's version of events, the angel says, "Why didn't you tell your father?" "I didn't know if he would believe me," Joseph says, to which the angel replies, "He will believe every word you say," and sends him back to the field to tell his father.
Joseph later said, "My father was the first to believe and said, 'It's of the Lord,' and said, 'Do as the angel requests.'" And the angel had shown Joseph Smith in vision what becomes the hill Cumorah.
In 1823, this hill was not called Cumorah. The unnamed hill was open pasture on the steep northern slope and more forested to the south. The plates lay buried in scattered trees on the northwest slope near the top.
It's a glacial gremlin that was created in a glacial age when the that glacier left a deposit hitting friction. And there are hundreds of such examples there from that glacial age. But this happens to be one of the highest, 117 feet in that region of country. Joseph Smith knew the hill. He knew where to go by reason of the angel. And he traversed the 3 miles. And Joseph Smith described to Oliver Cowdery later on the site and said that it was toward the north end and short of the top on the west side. And there Joseph Smith found the stone as it had been shown him.
The stone was thick and rounding in the middle on the upper side and thinner towards the edges, so that the middle part of it was visible above the ground. But the edge and all around was covered with earth. Joseph Smith.
He secured a pry pole and opened the stone box and there discovered the contents, the gold plates, a breastplate, and a Urim and Thummim. And those were the items that were there.
Joseph described the stone covering the box as being of considerable size. So just how big would that box have been?
The breastplate in particular explained that it was a very large breastplate, one that would cover the chest and fit around the gait of a very large man. The spectacles were also that way.
Oliver Cowdery described what happened next to Joseph as Joseph had told him.
On attempting to take possession of the record, a shock was produced upon his system by an invisible power, which deprived him, in a measure, of his natural strength. He desisted for an instant, and then made another attempt, but was more sensibly shocked than before. He therefore made the third attempt with an increased exertion when his strength failed him more than at either of the former times. He exclaimed, "Why can I not obtain this book?" "Because you have not kept the commandments of the Lord," answered a voice within a seeming short distance. He looked, and to his astonishment, there stood the angel. Oliver Cowdery.
The reason, in Oliver Cowdery's retelling of it, is that as he was going to the hill, and considering the indigent circumstances of his family and how poor they were, and he knew from what Moroni had told him, Joseph knew that this was a record of the ancient inhabitants of this continent of America. And he thought, you know, this is a book that's going to sell. Everybody is wondering, and he was right. It was a huge question at the time. How do the Native Americans, how do the Indians figure into global human history? Where did they come from? Who were they? And here Joseph has a book that is can at least fill in part of that story. And he realizes, we're told, that that book would probably sell pretty good. And so as he's going to the hill, he's getting more and more interested in how much money he will make from selling this book rather than on restoring the gospel, you know, and bringing to light the gospel that's in the pages of the book. And so his mind and his heart is focused on that.
Joseph's thoughts at that moment were on wealth and buried treasure. Now, to Moroni, that was unacceptable. But given Joseph's circumstances, it was understandable.
It makes some people uncomfortable to realize that Moroni reveals the Book of Mormon in a time and a place that is sort of already ripe with rumors, folk rumors about buried treasures guarded by spirits and even marvelous stones associated with finding these treasures. So my point about that is that's the very context you would choose, isn't it? If you were Moroni and your job from 1,000 years before was to prepare this record and then to prepare the young seer who'd been blessed already in the book itself to bring it to light, you're not going to go find Ralph Waldo Emerson at Harvard, because he's not going to believe you, and he doesn't have a context for it. You're going to find Joseph Smith on the frontier. You know that he knows how to use marvelous stones, or at least he's got the very rudimentary beginnings of his gift. He's developing the gift, and you go and you start where he is, which is to already have some idea that maybe there are buried treasures, and maybe they're very valuable, and maybe there's a spirit or an angel who guards them.
He gets there, and Moroni says, "Nothing doing, man. You got to have your heart and your mind in the right place before you're going to get this record. It can't come forth any other way." whoever brings this forth has to have their mind single to the glory of God and no other considerations in there. As Joseph was talking to Oliver Cowdery, it was very frank that his heart was not in the right place.
At that instant, he looked to the Lord in prayer, and the heavens were opened, and the glory of the Lord shone round about and rested upon him. While he thus stood gazing and admiring, the angel said, "Look!" And as he thus spake, he beheld the prince of darkness, surrounded by his innumerable train of associates. All this passed before him, and the heavenly messenger said, "All this is shown, the good and the evil, the holy and the impure, the glory of God and the power of darkness, that you may know hereafter the two powers, and never be influenced or overcome by that wicked one." Oliver Cowdery.
Then the angel says something to him that I think is really profoundly important. He says, "I want you to come back here every anniversary time, September 22nd, I think it was, 1824, 1825, 1826, and 1827. What's the significance of an annual visit to with an angel? Why did the angel Moroni set it up that way? Who's teaching who? Who's Joseph's prophet? Who's Joseph's bishop? Who's his mentor? But the annual visit of an angel, of this specific angel, whose office is to declare repentance, is a message of preparation. Because Joseph Smith has to be prepared to receive those plates. Not just physically, but spiritually. Now, in each one of those interviews held on the side of the hill Cumorah from 1824 to 1827, you may recall what Joseph Smith was taught. It's a profound verse in Joseph Smith History, chapter 1, verse 54. And it goes like this: "And he gave me instruction and intelligence about what the Lord was going to do and how and in what manner to conduct his church and kingdom in the last days." How much did Joseph Smith learn from Moroni in those annual visits? How much can you learn from an angel in an hour? It's just amazing to think upon that pattern of instruction.
He was instructed that he would not be able to receive this record until he would be obedient to God's commands and keep it safe. And not until he was ready to do that would he ever receive the record. I think it's quite marvelous that he measured up.
Encouraged by his father's earlier response, Joseph returned from the hill and shared the news with his family.
When Joseph came in the evening, he told the whole family all that he had made known to his father in the field. We sat up very late and listened attentively to all that he had to say to us. But his mind had been so exercised that he became very much fatigued. When Alvin saw this, he said, "Now, brother, let us go to bed, and we will get up early in the morning and go to work so as to finish our day's labor by an hour before sunset. And if Mother will get our suppers early, we will then have a fine long evening to sit down and hear you talk."
Lucy says that subsequently they would gather often, and Joseph would visit with them about this ancient record and ancient Americans.
In the course of our evening conversations, Joseph would give us some of the most amusing recitals which could be imagined. He would describe the ancient inhabitants of this continent, their dress, their manner of traveling, the animals which they rode, the cities that were built by them, the structure of their buildings, with every particular of their mode of warfare, their religious worship, as particularly as though he had spent his life with them.
I think it's insightful that at least what Lucy tells us about what Joseph told them was all cultural data to speak of. The animals they rode, their warfare, their clothing, what they ate, those kinds of things. It seems to be at that early stage that not only did the Smith family not understand what this record was all about and what its purpose was and what that Joseph's divine call, what it really meant, but neither did Joseph. This would be a growing process that would unfold in Joseph's life as he was instructed.
A few years back, History of the Saints began production of 7 seasons of a documentary television series titled History of the Saints. Season 1, Foundations of the Restoration. Season 2, Joseph Smith's Kirtland. Season 3, From Pentecost to Persecution, The Missouri Years. And Season 4, Joseph Smith's Nauvoo. Then 3 more four seasons telling the story of Brigham Young and the Saints, beginning with the Nauvoo Exodus in 1846, titled Gathering to the West, then Building Zion, and finally, The Kingdom Endures. Altogether, over 100 hours of Latter-day Saint pioneer history. For these and all of History of the Saints books and DVD products, visit us at historyofthesaints.org.
Alvin dies tragically, and according to Joseph's mother, that sort of puts an end to it. They don't want to talk about it anymore because it just reminds them of Alvin and his loss. But one of the last things Alvin says to Joseph is, be faithful to your instructions and do everything in your power to get that record.
He was a youth of such singular goodness of disposition and moral character, kind and amiable manners, so much so that lamentation and mourning filled the whole neighborhood where we lived. Then it is not to be wondered at if more than the usual grief filled the hearts of those from whose immediate circle he was taken.
Supposedly, Reverend Jesse Townsend preached a funeral sermon for Alvin and basically indicated that he was going to hell because he was unbaptized. I think it's interesting that Joseph Sr. is the one who makes the fuss about what Reverend Jesse Townsend had to say about Alvin not being baptized. Lucy, there's no account in her record that would suggest that she was upset either. At least she doesn't convey that idea. But she set to work to make sure it didn't happen with the rest of the children, at least the mature ones. And she was instrumental in seeing to Hiram, Sophronia, and Samuel, or Harrison, as he was called, all probably joining the Presbyterian Church in 1824, when even she herself probably became a full-fledged member.
Joseph Smith goes to the Hill in 1824. We know this story from his mother's history. He's been very diligent to obey the instructions the angel's given him. He's tried to control his thoughts about getting the plates for wealth and being able to pay off the family mortgage and all these temptations that would come to him. So he's been very good about that. He gets the record out of the box in which it's buried, turns around, he says to go, and then has this thought, you can't use the plates for wealth, but what about the other stuff in the box? So he says, he sets the plates down, covers over the other things, and when he turns around again to get the plates, they're gone. And he's horrified. By now he knows very well that he accounts to a messenger sent from the presence of God for every thought he has, as well as every action. So he's terrified. He begins to pray, and he sees Moroni there explaining to him that he can't have the plates if he's going to think about any aspect of using this project to get wealth. He's forbidden to do so. And until he becomes not only willing, but according to what Lucy tells us, able to master that part of his self, he can't have the plates. So Moroni says, let's talk again in 1 year.
There are no details of what transpired between Joseph and Moroni in 1825. Now keep in mind that every year the Smith family had a heavy mortgage payment they had to meet.
Shortly after that, in October, a man by the name of Josiah Stoll came up out of Chenango County and contacted him and asked him if he wouldn't come and assist him in the search and a dig for Spanish silver down on the Susquehanna. Joseph Smith said that initially he demurred. He said, no, I don't believe I'll do that. But then Josiah Stoll said the magic word. In 1825, the Smiths had their final payment to be made. They were getting toward their final payment. And they needed cash in hand. And while Father Smith was away and Hiram was away, they had hoped to get the necessary means, but they didn't have the money. Josiah Stoll offered to pay him $14 a month, room and board, and he would take his father too. And with that consideration, both Joseph and his father, Joseph Smith Sr., went with Josiah Stoll to the site of the dig.
And what's going on there is that Stoll comes looking for Joseph Smith precisely because he's a seer, because he can see. And the neighbors know it, and Joseph's got a reputation for it. One of the ways we know that is because Lucy's history tells us about it. He had gained this reputation, she says, by which he could see things invisible to the natural eye. So people are interested in how Joseph could help them. But Joseph, turns out, is unable to use this gift to make Josiah Stoll or himself or anybody else rich. Moroni is trying to tell Joseph at the same time, look, this gift is not for getting rich, not for you or anybody else. And according to an interview that reports some things Martin Harris said, about this time Moroni tells Joseph Smith he must quit the company of the money diggers.
There was much lore and legend in Palmyra and the surrounding area of ancient civilizations, buried treasure, divining rods, and seer stones. Joseph himself possessed a seer stone and had the gift of seeing before he ever met Moroni and possessed the Urim and Thummim.
As a village seer, people would hire him or he would go search for this buried treasure. And it's difficult to know his exact role in this, but around 1822, he apparently found two different stones.
So to put it another way, Joseph Smith, we might say, is a lowercase s seer, a long time before he's an uppercase S seer. A long time before we sustain him as a seer and a prophet and a revelator, Joseph Smith has the gift to be able to see things that other people can't see.
Thank you for listening. If you would like more information on what you have listened to, please go to historyofthesaints.org. The History of the Saints team that produced this podcast has also produced numerous books and full-length documentaries on early Latter-day Saint church history and the key figures that made that history. Thank you for joining us, and we'll see you next time.
This podcast of History of the Saints has been produced by Dennis Lyman and Glenn Rawson. History of the Saints is a 501c3 nonprofit organization.